Welcome to the We Talk Careers podcast, brought to you by Women in ETFs. This is Christine Delano, and I'm thrilled you've joined me. If you're pursuing excellence in your own career or intrigued by the hustle required for a career on Wall Street, this podcast is for you. We've made all this advice accessible. Grab your own Thrive Guide with a workbook on leadership skills at ChristineDelano.com. So put aside that massive to-do list and let's get inspired. We are diving into Wall Street careers, specifically in the exciting space of exchange-traded funds. Today, we're talking about capital markets at issuers. What does it mean to be the global head of capital markets? We have Janelle Jackson and Anita Rausch here to tell us. Welcome, Janelle and Anita, to the We Talk Careers podcast.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you both here. Anita, let's start with you. Will you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. Again, my name is Anita Rausch, and I'm the global head of ETF capital markets at AllianceBernstein. We are a newer ETF issuer to the marketplace about a little over a year in. I've pretty much grown up in ETFs, starting in ETFs back in 2000, working my way through operations, the trading side, and then ended up in capital markets about 12 years ago.
Thanks. And what about yourself? What are you doing when you're not talking ETFs?
Well, when I'm not talking ETFs, I have a 9 and a 12-year-old that keep me in the weeds, essentially, all day, all night. But what I like to do with them is we like to ski in the winter. And then for me and my husband, we like to drive cars in the summer.
Drive cars?
Fast cars. Yeah.
Oh, fast cars. Oh, that sounds like fun.
Like around tracks and rent fast cars and all that fun stuff.
That's awesome. Janelle, can you tell us about yourself?
Of course. So hi, Christine, and thank you for inviting me back. So for those of you listening, you may remember me from one of the earliest We Talk podcasts. I'm the one who loves Chanel bags and miniature schnauzers, and I'm currently global head of ETF capital markets and broker and index relations at Vanguard. Some of the things that I enjoy outside of work are running, but I'm very slow. So maybe I'll call that slow running. I also love traveling, still places where there's like nice warm weather and a beach. Love a hotel room with a pool or maybe an overwater villa. That would be great. I also really enjoy spending time with my family who live in Atlanta, Georgia. And I'm a total foodie. So if anybody wants to connect and talk about food things, I'm around on LinkedIn. Send me your favorite restaurants and I'll send you mine.
Thank you, Janelle. And I will put a link to your episode, High Performing Teams, in the show notes because it's just fabulous. Love to talk from handbags to robotics to food to all things creating awesome teams. So thank you for coming back. And Anita, so pleased that you could join us today. So we're in a season really drilling into the challenges and rewards of ETF careers. And our listeners love when we start with stories, we dive into what it actually looks and feels like to be in the spaces that you both occupy. Anita, can we start with you? Can you tell us a recent day in the life story, maybe something that happened recently, something that exemplifies your role, or give us an idea of like, every day, does it look the same, or are you tackling different fires and challenges each day?
Well, there's definitely, I mean, in my role and in my experience, there's no typical day in capital markets because there's so many different spokes to, I think, our responsibilities and what we do. I essentially manage the ETF and its secondary life, but that really involves managing a lot of internal stakeholders as well as external stakeholders. So I cater to the ETF portfolio management teams, to their trading teams. I cater to the entire ETF ecosystem, and at the end of the day, to our clients. So whichever wheel needs the grease that day is kind of where I'm focused. The goal at the end of the day for all of us, right, is to raise assets. So I'm part of building the ETFs to be the most liquid they can be, so market makers can price them as tightly as they can, and so sales can sell them. And then when end clients want to know how to reach that liquidity, I'm here to help guide them. So a typical day involves anything from talking to portfolio managers, compliance, and accounting about how to keep our ETFs tax efficient, to working with market makers on the nuances of creation redemption, to talking to clients on how to reach the liquidity that we all profess is there through their individual path.
Thank you, Anita. What about you, Janelle? What keeps you busy each day?
Yeah, I'd say a similar response to Anita in that there's really no such thing as a typical day. You know, I've got teams around the world, so on any given day, I could be in London or Toronto or Melbourne, New York, wherever. But I always have a few things that I want to accomplish that are going to be consistent. And first, that's that my teams are helping investors have the best possible trading experience and achieve the lowest possible trading costs when buying and selling ETFs. So we're responsible for $2.3 trillion in ETF assets under management, and that is not our money. So we're very thoughtful about what we do every day. Second, that, you know, our global teams feel the impact that they have on clients, that they really enjoy what they do and they have a good time doing it. So I can't say I've caught anyone doing this, but I'm pretty sure after work one day someone has skipped to the parking lot. And that's really what I hope for my teams every single day. And third, you know, that my teams and I have learned something new each day that will help our organization and our clients continue to be successful in the future.
Thank you, Janelle. I remember you and I meeting 2023. This was a big conference, right, down in Miami.
Yep.
And we were on the beach kind of area with the bars. And I just have to speak to our listeners about how smart you need to be in the roles these women have. Like, I'm watching Janelle. So we're kind of making our way over to this table and these traders are coming up and they are just like vamping with Janelle about these different projects going on and things like that. And I'm getting like every other word and then I'm getting every fourth word. And it was just, it was really just this humbling experience of knowing how deep you need to be in sort of the trading, the understanding of the underpinnings of what makes ETFs so successful in order to both hold your jobs. And yeah, it was just a moment for me, Janelle. And then we sat down, we had such a lovely conversation. And every time we talk, Janelle, I just enjoy it so much. But to be both personable and to actually understand your industry so well. So maybe, Janelle, take us a little bit into that. You know, did you start with sort of the nuts and bolts of things, or have you always been really people driven and then learning sort of your smarts as you went along?
Yeah, you know, I started out my career in investment research. And now looking back, I was in a role where I was responsible for manager due diligence. So that really helped me understand the money management process. And it was really building a foundation. And if I could look back and give my younger self some advice, and I always say this, it's that be patient. Things that feel like grunt work very early on in your career are really the skills that you'll look back on and say, hey, those are the things that are helping me be successful way down the track and in the role that I'm in today. But as far as what I do now, I mean, I'd say I actually really miss spreadsheets some days. So I don't really get to get my hands dirty on that task-oriented fun stuff anymore. Most of my day is really people-driven, but still fun stuff. I could probably do a lot more at this stage of my career to continue to showcase my own investment acumen, but I really want to take a step back and make space for my team now so that they can do this.
Anita, so taking us into task-oriented, people-driven, it sounds like you started your career in, you know, operations and sort of really understanding, like Janelle was saying, you know, kind of the grunt work of really understanding ETFs. Was that something that drove you in the beginning, or were you always sort of a relationship-focused person, or did you really like kind of that work when you started?
So the beginnings of my career was definitely task-oriented in operations. And to Janelle's point, I completely agree. It was grunt work. I didn't mind the grunt work when I was 23, 24, right? But it gave me this incredible foundation of, one, the appreciation of everything that has to get done, but two, the understanding of what gets done, right? So like I started in ETFs in operations, I was creating and redeeming them in the back office back when there were, like, I'm dating myself, but, you know, 30 or 40 ETFs out there. And so I understand what it took to put them together and then take them apart. And at the end of the day, that's what you really need to understand to price them. And so that was an easy transition into trading, and then an easy transition into representing them to our clients and making them the most efficient, because then I knew how to work with the traders. I knew what they were up against. I think my career evolved from task-oriented, which I was good at, right, because I liked the spreadsheet. I liked the black and white of it, right, into people-driven. And I learned the relationship management part of it. And I actually, as an introvert, it was a little difficult for me at first, you know, just putting myself out there. But then it got to be really the fun part for me. And that's what one of the things that I enjoy, I think, most about this role is that it is such a relationship management role internally and externally. I think ETFs have always been unique because they cross all different asset classes globally, but they put them into an equity wrapper. And so at any issuer firm that I've been at, which has only been two, right, I have to cross all the different asset classes and then relay them into an equity wrapper, work with all these different divisions, all these different systems, and coordinate them internally. And then I have to manage all the relationships with the market makers and the exchanges and the custodians and whatnot. And so the relationship management, the people-driven part of it is such an important part. And then it's just very much like a life lesson, because I think life is a relationship management job, because we can all get our stuff done better and happier and easier when there is a level of trust with each other.
Well said. Well said. Janelle, when we spoke last time on the podcast, I think you were chief of staff at that point. Am I right?
I was probably heading up the U.S. ETF capital markets team, but I had served as a chief of staff probably about a decade ago.
Oh, okay. So yeah. Maybe take us a little bit through that trajectory. What did it look like? And did you always have your eye on this prize of, you know, being in the seat you are right now? Or did things sort of ebb and flow as you discovered other roles?
Yeah, I mean, I had an unintentionally organic career path. Some of these things just kind of fell into place. Maybe I was in the right place at the right time, or maybe the right roles were open. But, you know, like I said, before I joined ETF Capital Markets, my experience was in manager due diligence, and I was a quantitative equity portfolio manager. So I feel like if you think about, you know, collecting your infinity stones, I was gathering them up amongst asset classes. But I was missing a stone, and it was fixed income. So I really wanted to go deeper and learn more and build my fixed income acumen. And that's what an ETF capital markets role has really helped me do. Is, you know, I brought my equities expertise. I knew the ETF as a vehicle, but this part of the industry truly being multi-asset is really unique and a great opportunity to go deep across asset classes. I was also pretty late in my career as a specialist transitioning to leadership. So I knew I wanted to transition to leadership. I had gone to business school. I felt like I had all the great training, but I didn't think I would be confident as a leader without having like a strong base or foundation of investment acumen. So I took on leadership much later in my career. And I feel like imposter syndrome hits you even when you have the knowledge sometimes. So I knew that I would have been a mess if I skipped straight to leadership without enough expertise to really feel comfortable leaning in to learn the things that I did not know, because I could stand firm on the things that I did know.
And standing firm on the things that you do know, I think is a trap that some people fall into, right? Mm-hmm. It's this idea of like, well, I don't know much about fixed income, as you were saying, so I'm just going to kind of stay over in my space. You know, yeah. I'm going to stay kind of being the smartest person in the room, or approximately, you know, like in each of the teams, having such a deep knowledge in one area, but then being like, I don't want to expose myself to the fact of what I don't know over here. So what kind of gave you the confidence to be able to sort of drill into areas that you didn't have the experience in?
Yeah, I think it was just not fearing failure, maybe as much as I had done earlier in my career. And then to the point that Anita made, relationship management is really important as a leader. And the better you are with building trusting relationships, the easier it is to build really strong teams, and also for you to have really smart people on your team that are going to help you. So I don't always have to be the deepest expert, because I've got such a great team surrounding me and they bring a ton of expertise to the table. Just because I'm leading the team, I don't feel like I have to have all of the answers, especially when you think about where we are now in the industry with emerging technology and what's going on with AI. And I'm not an AI expert. Someone around me who's really deep there and can think about ways that we can improve and innovate our processes, yes, that's great. And so I always want to be surrounded by really smart people who like sharing information and driving towards great outcomes for clients.
So speaking of AI and other sort of emerging technologies or trends, Anita, what do you see in your crystal ball in terms of what will impact your role or even the ETF industry going forward? Where is your mind?
Well, all over the place, to be quite honest. But emerging technologies and trends affects every part of the industry, I think, and it remains to be seen, you know, how we're going to digest any of them. But I think we're, you know, all of our processes always move towards to more efficiency. But, you know, I can get as technical as technology that's going to help deliver our data more successfully, where we have better basket integrity, right, in delivering the PCFs on a daily basis to our market makers. But for me, right, like I'm always looking for technology that's going to help me with the holy grail, I think, of all capital markets goals, which is essentially to tackle the market order and making it easiest for our clients to trade without interrupting or having too much price impact.
Can you drill into that a little bit? Tell me a little bit more about that holy grail that is important to your clients.
Well, I think, I mean, every client that we cater to or that ETFs cater to have different platforms upon which they trade, right? I think it's very interesting. And part of the reason why our roles were developed, capital markets, is because there's two parts to the ETFs that are going to impact the performance that the end client feels or realizes, right? One is the investment strategies, and that's what our expert portfolio management teams kind of put together and our sales sell is our investment expertise. But then with the ETF, the execution is the responsibility of the end advisor. And that execution is based on one, the platform and the technology that they have, and then their access to the liquidity that I make sure is there. But I think the market order is something that is been used in the single stock equity space for the majority of everyone's life, and it doesn't really work well with ETFs just because ETFs have liquidity, but they respond to the request for liquidity. It's not always posted on screen for various different reasons. And I think one of the key themes that all the capital markets people in the industry can coalesce on is trying to educate, one, our client base, how not to use a market order and what other investment strategies they can use that can lower their price impact. But then also, for me, it's always been looking into the ecosystem to see how we can solve for that without having to change behavior.
Which we know is supremely difficult, you know, having very few like understanding of what the carrot is, how to change behavior. So
exactly.
So yeah, good luck to you, right? Janelle, what about you? Take us a little bit more into how you're thinking through emerging technologies. I imagine I saw you nodding while Anita was talking quite a bit through that, but what else is kind of keeping you up and keeping you excited about your role?
Yeah, I mean, we think pretty similarly, and what ETF Capital Markets does at Vanguard pretty similarly. You know, we carve up our roles across four pillars: primary market operations, so the creation redemption mechanism Anita was just talking about; secondary market analytics, so, you know, what do spreads look like? What role do lead market makers play in that process? When might we need to get on the phone and call somebody for help? The last two buckets, client service and thought leadership and market structure, are really what I see us being able to lean into, just given all of the advancements in technology. So how can we automate more of these processes that we have around primary and secondary markets so that we can have more time for those value add activities, like supporting client outcomes and driving lower total cost of ownership for the industry? So as Anita mentioned, indirectly providing guidance on trading best practices. You know, maybe we can partner on a paper, Anita, of something with a cool headline like "Stop the Market Orders." And, you know, thinking about the roles that we play as issuers and providing input in the process around regulatory proposals and changes to make sure that, you know, we're still having healthy products in the industry, and that there's a strong ecosystem to support the growing ETF product lineup.
Thank you, Janelle. You mentioned something earlier about sort of speaking to your younger self and saying, you know, don't be scared of the grunt work, you know, put your time in, really understand this industry before sort of pursuing leadership and not getting caught up maybe in the title or this idea that are you on the leadership team so early, you know, instead just sort of make yourself invaluable with what you know.
Yeah.
So just speaking to maybe folks that are coming up behind you and are looking at your seat and saying, wow, that would be an exciting job to have. What would you say that they should be working on now to create strengths or qualities that you consider really important to be able to take on your role?
Yeah, I mean, hats off to whomever this is, because I feel like it took me a really long time to figure out what it was that I wanted to do. So if you already have your eye on replacing me, that's great. I'll tell you how you can get there. But, you know, one of the strengths that I've always felt like has helped me advance in my career is just being intellectually curious. And I can look back on every job that I've had and said that I've learned something in those roles that I need to know to do the job that I'm in today well. And that goes way back to, I love how we date ourselves on these things, but, you know, passing out papers in my first job and putting corporate actions on portfolio managers' calendars, like that was my job. You know, all of the Excel spreadsheets and combing through data, like all of those things were helpful in me really building this foundation of success. And how does that translate into skills that I have and leverage today? So those things result in, you know, attention to detail. I can look at numbers and I can see when things are off, like that doesn't look right. I can identify trends in data. You know, I understand the needs of our clients. I've been at an advisory firm where I was a Vanguard client, was on a team that did tactical asset allocation modeling. And I know when those things work out really well. And I also know the benefits of strategic asset allocation and buy and hold. And all these things come together. You know, you think about having global experience and having worked on a team in Australia, just bringing that back to being a global head has helped me learn how to motivate others to really proactively solve problems in support of successful client outcomes.
Wow. Thank you, Janelle. I'm going to have to like fit in a little bit of a call out to our loyal listeners, because something happened while you were first explaining all of this that has happened a number of times. And I just have to kind of harken back a little bit to where I am in our life right now. And I have a son who's looking at colleges, and it's like bringing back all these like feels of like what it was. And he keeps asking me, well, mom, you know, I was a neuroscience major. So like, what was that like? And did you enjoy it? And, you know, how often did you meet with your professors? And, you know, what were you doing in your free time? And maybe he asked me more academic questions than he's actually thinking. He's probably a little bit more interested in all the social stuff as well. And I do remember a lot of drinking games. And so that brings me back to what you were saying, is that if our loyal listeners were taking a drink each time someone would say intellectual curiosity as a sort of a specific skill for any of our leadership places within ETFs, they'd be drinking every episode. Like, it is amazing how that idea of cultivating curiosity in yourself, and not just for the sake of, oh, I wonder, but actually then being willing to like do the work. Yep. To find things out, and then disseminating that information to people that you want to get in front of. So say you have a mentor and you're like, well, I'm really curious about this because they're already working on it, and maybe I can add value as well. So seeing a full circle moment with intellectual curiosity, I'm just sort of blown away that it almost comes up on every single episode when I talk about it. And not just comes up, but is like the first thing that's mentioned. So, kind of have to call that out. And also, Anita, I was seeing you sort of nod when she said intellectual curiosity. So yeah, take it from there. What else do you see in terms of strengths, or even that one?
Yeah, I mean, when I was thinking about it, that's sort of the underpinning, and that's the intellectual part didn't come up, but curiosity came up in my head, right? The intellectual was definitely needed to make it more robust, but it's the curiosity that is the underpinning for what I look for, right? Because in capital markets, like I was talking about before, I think you need two different skill sets. And that's partly why it's, I think, a little bit more complicated than other roles. You need a technical skill set, understanding of the marketplace, understanding of market structure, trading strategies, how everything works together infrastructurally. But then, like we were talking about the relationship management part, you need soft skills. You need a soft skill set, right, to manage the internal and the external stakeholders and all of those relationships and get everyone to work together. But I think, like I said, the underpinning of both of those, to being good at both of those, is curiosity, right? To become technically advanced, you have to do the grunt work. You have to ask the questions. You can't just sit there and let your career drag you through, right? You have to guide yourself through your career, and that's really asking questions and pushing forward. But I think in the relationship management part, curiosity is what makes, I think, the greatest relationship manager, because curiosity is genuine, right? You're asking questions because you want to know, how do you do this? What is your problem? How many kids do you have? Where do you live? What's your life like? Everything. I mean, it spans the gamut from, you know, when you talk to people, in learning about the technical stuff, but learning about the soft stuff that really creates that bond and that relationship. And so I think curiosity, genuine curiosity, is really the underpinning of any forward advancement.
And I love that curiosity can go both ways. It can fit in the task of what you're talking about. So I remember first sort of drilling into ETFs after I'd already spent 10 years in the broker-dealer world and just learning the creation redemption process. I was so curious, you know, and the more I drilled and the more I sat with people, I'm like, wow. On surface, you can kind of explain it with, you know, baskets and securities and things like that. But as you drill into it, it's a highly complex sort of beast, and so enjoyed that. But I also think that, for example, my willingness to sort of host this podcast and like have the relationships I do is because I'm curious about people. Yeah. And, you know, and that curiosity sort of leads me to empathy, because the more curious I am, the more I learn stories, and the more I'm like, oh, wow, you know, there's so much to know, and there's so much to like support people and to, you know, just be curious about people's lives. So I love to sort of knit, as Nita, you were saying, those both sides of this into how we're sort of supporting people in creating the roles that are going to be available in the ETF space going forward. So thank you for that. So in terms of sort of curiosity and learning about people and different things, one way to do that is through books. I'm an avid reader and a writer. So maybe, Janelle, starting with you, is there a book that you would recommend to our readers or something, or to our listeners, or something else that has caught your attention recently?
I like how you refer to the listeners as readers. Like, we all try to find time, right, for our leisurely reading.
I'm always hopeful that our listeners are readers.
Yeah, I hope so too. I mean, I don't find that much time because reading is such an important part of my job, but it's usually ETF or markets related content. So, you know, around holiday time every year is when I feel like I'm either taking time off or I have just got my ducks in a row and I'm in a place where I have more time for myself. And this is like peak leisurely reading season for me. So I'm pretty excited about that. And recently, one of my favorite people at work, he's one of those guys that all of these TikToks have been about. So how often do you think about the Roman Empire? And this is somebody who answers that with quite often. And I just didn't understand the hype around this. Like, I've seen some of the movies. I've definitely read up some history, but it's my knowledge is pretty dated. So he suggested I check out some books by Ryan Holiday, and they are about philosophy. And they're kind of linking philosophy of historical figures to current events. So the book that he suggested is called Discipline is Destiny, The Power of Self-Control. So unfortunately, I haven't had enough self-control to read the book yet, but I'm pretty excited about it. And I feel like it's going to make me one of these really interesting people to talk to at holiday parties. So, you know, I'll be using up all of my introvert energy sharing the information that I read in this book, but I'm pretty excited about it. Just lessons that we can learn today that are applicable from stories about historical figures. So that seems pretty cool.
That does sound amazing. I'm not only going to add it to the bookshelf, but something I'm going to put on my TBR list to get through as well. And I actually love that you gave us another reason to read, which is, you know, just find an engaging way to be able to talk to people at parties, right?
Yeah.
In the book that's going out on submission soon that I just wrote, there's this place where she's like, she knows she needs to read or listen to a podcast or do something before she heads to her mother-in-law's house. Because, you know, if she doesn't know the latest stats on blueberries or, you know, how to, you know, do something, she's going to be, you know, spewing financial jargon at her mother-in-law. So, you know, yeah. Just that idea that you can get into the softer side of things that really help us connect with people. I love it. Anita, what about you? Do you have a book or a recommendation on something our listeners can read?
Well, so as a mother of two very active and complex children with a full-time job, I definitely don't read as much as I want to, but I keep buying books for some reason. And so I have stacks of books in a bookshelf. I have stacks of books next to my bedside of my to-do list, of my, you know, my wish list of things that I can read. But I have to say that there are a lot of books that I read when I was younger and free, essentially. And I started rereading. And a couple of months ago, I found the time to reread one. It's a little intense. It's called My Ishmael by Daniel Quinn. And it's a philosophical book. It's essentially a dialogue between a gorilla and a student about human history, mostly tribal culture, where a lot of our tradition began and where essentially civilization evolved from. There's definitely a lot in there, but it's a philosophical look at our way of life. But it's also challenging everything that we know. It's challenging human supremacy and us being the last step in evolution. And it's challenging things like school systems and do we really need them? As humans really learn organically what we need to know and how to carry on sort of our individual culture. At the end of the day, for me, it was a very thought-provoking piece to just question everything, right? Think outside of the box. Is this really how it has to be? Which serves me in life, in raising children. Should my kids really be doing this, or does this benchmark really matter to work, right? Yes, this is the way it's always been done, but do we still have to do it this way? But one of the things that it really reminded me of is some of the existential holes I fall into in life and in work, especially when I try to understand things like the value of Bitcoin, and I don't want to go down that hole, but when I try to dig into the value of anything, because at the heart of everything, I'm a trader and everything has to be fair valued. You know, the value of everything is perceived in the eye of the beholder. And it's, you know, we make up everything and we make the rules. And so it really it's perspective changing.
Right. And you actually become aware of the lens in which you see things, right? You know, you feel like you're approaching everything from some sort of like virgin perspective, but you recognize that there are so many lenses that have been, you know, sort of placed over or you've placed over your own eye. And so getting back to those like basic questions of what is society? What are individuals? You know, like, why are we here? And what is our purpose? I think is, yeah, it's fascinating. As long as we don't find you on some Pacific Island, you know, like totally cut out from everything, sort of giving everything up. But I love the idea of taking that step back and doing that reread. Well, thank you both for your time today. It was just such a pleasure to have you on, and just getting a taste of your intellect was just inspiring to me. Thank you both.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you, our listeners, for spending your time with us. I hope this is not just information, but you let it be transformational in how you think about your career. I'm rooting for you. If you're an Apple user, I'd really appreciate it if you took a few seconds to leave a rating and a review. Your ratings and reviews tell Apple that this is a podcast worth listening to. And in turn, your reviews will help We Talk Careers get in front of more listeners looking to succeed, just like you. And while you're there, go ahead and hit that follow button, because there's going to be another brand new episode and you don't want to miss it. Until then, keep thriving. Thank you for listening.